Real Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it, the weekend edition. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, have Colton and Ethan mind and shop behind the glass.
Oh, we got two people today.
We have two experts.
Look at that.
That are getting comfortable. They ignore.
We each get our own producer. Is that how that works?
I get two.
I get zero.
And okay. I will delegate to you. Good morning, Kranak. How are you?
You know, I'm good, man. It's week one of camp.
I know.
Camp's over. Or week one of camp is over.
It is.
It's good.
But it's been
a week full
of camp.
It's getting real, you know?
Yeah.
It just feels good. I was at Fan Day last week. Did you go to Fan Day?
No, I did not because the kid
you
wanted
hate
to
your
wear
son.
No.
Is that just wanted
because
to crush his dreams to start
son.
The weekend?
No, I remember. Listen, do you remember your Fan Day? Did your folks take you ever?
No, I never went to that. That was the first time.
So they really hated you. Okay.
No. I didn't want to. No. Yeah, maybe they did. God, now that you bring up this painful memory.
I would have. Schmidt hates his son. He'll watch Nebraska. And he wants him to win, and he went through his phase of Rex Burkhead and Kenny Bell jerseys. But then for some unknown reason, because they were awesome in basketball, that's kind of his sport, he's been brainwashed to like Sparty. So he's got probably as much or more Michigan State crap than Nebraska stuff.
Now, hold this. I mean, this is a phase that'll pass, though. So what grade is he in?
He's going into fifth.
Wouldn't you say it was – so I remember experimenting with a lot of different teams during elementary.
This is a 30 for 30.
But you know what I mean? You didn't really know. You're sort of like – because when you first start liking sports, you just like the uniforms.
Right.
You maybe get a random Hutch football uniform. It's
right.
Like,
and for him, it was what Oregon Mariota jersey can I ask Santa for? Okay.
But then you start committing right around junior high, early high school.
Years, 10 years of age, you kind of get on the radar. And then by junior high, you're all in until they break your heart for a team.
So there's still hope. But, I mean, at least if he's going to like a team, I respect the hell out of Michigan State basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's... And in fact, if you were to ask me which team do I respect most in college basketball, it would be them. Like by far. So he's gone. Maybe you're raising him okay.
I try to. He's my pride and joy. He's the best. But no, we didn't get to Fan Day. But I saw you were there, and I saw you had a front row seat for the movie with your red Adidas sticking out. That was a pretty good shot there.
Hey, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, we were front row. Just laying right on the field watching Batman Lego Movie inside Memorial Stadium. It was kind of surreal. It's a bit of a
most
different
of the
deal.
Time you run on the field, you're escorted off, Kranak, but you got to kick it and watch things. And you know, there's so much to talk about with kind of the positions and the vibe with camp. I want to start with keeping with the respect card, the top 25, because that came out this week, and Nebraska, not a shock, does not find themselves in the top 25. And when you look at the Cleveland.com poll or even the Hail Varsity yearbook, you ask most people around the league, Nebraska's right now, if we got to peg them, if we had, gun to our head, they're the third team in the West. Maybe they're six or seven in the entire Big Ten.
Yep.
And you got to earn your respect. Michigan State has done that aside from last year. Ohio State sure has done that, but begrudgingly, Nebraska fans give you may not like them, but I think you respect Iowa's toughness on the line of scrimmage. The smart kids at Northwestern find a way to get it done to the tune of between 7 and 8, and a great year for them, 10 wins a season. And then the Wisconsin model, you bet your butt you respect Wisconsin because they just continually get it done. In Nebraska coming into the others receiving votes, what was it, 19 votes or 22 votes? And I'm sorry, the specifics aren't completely accurate, but it's, you know, 22 coaches, I believe, or around there.
Good for like 34th.
I think like.
Or something.
Well, it's 37th. I mean, they were behind Northwestern. All right. All right. But you know what I'm saying? Mid-30s right now.
Yeah.
And Nebraska's got a ways to go to earn the respect back. And that's just the coaches right now. I mean, think about 65 Power 5 teams. Yeah. And Nebraska's flat in the middle. And as much as this year is different feeling and looking because of what you have at quarterback and you have just some inexperience / non-starters with opportunity, the way these guys have gone about their business, Nebraska football 2017 fall camp, it's been to kind of get that respect back. And you have examples of it everywhere. And two that stuck out to me this week have been Lamar Jackson being 1,000% real after Tuesday's practice.
I was so impressed with
Weren't
what
you?
He said.
Oh, I mean, didn't you just say, who is this guy, and can we get more dudes that are able to look in the mirror and be able to own it? I mean, that's
big time. And if you didn't follow it, Lamar Jackson pretty much said, I was terrible last year.
And
I wasn't
bad
physical
attitude.
Enough.
Yeah.
My head wasn't right, which is exactly what his very, very accurate criticism has been. That's exactly where I was. I was like, what is this outsized confidence in Lamar Jackson? Where is this coming from? Because when I saw him on the field, I saw him bailing on contact against Tennessee. Like, and it's not like you were looking for it.
No, it just stuck out.
You weren't like looking for Lamar Jackson. You're just watching the game, and then you notice one of the guys in red not trying to be a part of the action. And you're like, what is that? What? What's he doing? Why is he that he should try to tackle the other guy? What's he doing? Especially a guy that's built like him. Dude's a monster at corner. He should be mixing it up. And he more or less admitted that this week. He's like, I don't even like to watch film of myself. My head wasn't right. I was terrible. I was like, okay, good. Because you know, one of the ways that you're going to improve and get on the mend is like, first, you have to admit.
You've got a problem.
Right. You have to admit there's a problem. And
recognize the issue.
Yeah. And he did. So like, look, we'll see where that leads. But that's a promising sign. Mm-hmm. If he had been out in the interviews just being like, yeah, you know, I'm the man. I'm just going to continue what I did last year or whatever. I'd be like, whoa. But he's, you know, so promising sign that he admits that there was a problem. And I'll tell you what, the coaches, it's a ridiculous amount of faith that they're putting in this guy. When you compare his on-the-field performance last year to how much faith they have in him. I mean, think about it. As soon as Chris Jones went down, didn't everybody pretty much think, okay, Kalu's moving back. You got to stabilize that secondary, right? Just to stabilize it. You didn't know if that was going to be Lamar's side or Chris's side, but you're like, okay, Kalu's going to come back. And they're like, no, they're not moving Kalu back. It's like, whoa, hold on. So you're just going to trust that guy that was bailing on contact last year against Tennessee. And after his first game, basically, Lamar Jackson was basically a non-factor. He played in 5 games, but you can't remember like his big play.
Yeah,
right?
What's his role?
Right? Yeah, you just can't. He just wasn't a factor last year at all. And then Eric Lee barely played a snap. And those are the two guys you're rolling with at corner. So when Chris Jones goes down, you're like, they got to move Kalu back. And they don't, which tells you that they really, really believe. Lamar Jackson has had like basically bombs going off around him, and they're just like, nope, he is locked into that spot. You know what I mean? Like he has that spot on lockdown, and you're like, it doesn't match what you've seen from him so far. the amount of confidence they have versus what you've seen from him on the field is a total mismatch.
It is, and I think you have to give a couple of gold stars here, not only to Lamar, Mark, mm-hmm. with his 180 attitude-wise, but just going to work, being dedicated and serious about it. And then, I mean, let's not discount the change at position coach and his comfort level with Dante Williams. And had a chance to talk to Dante Williams, you know, the media did, and I asked him about confidence, and his attitude is straight up bulletproof with, you come in with confidence, you need to be cocky, and I'm paraphrasing, and if I have to tell you to be confident, then I don't want you here. So his mantra is, you're the best. It's the wide receiver diva attitude applied to the defensive back position. And you got to have it. You just got to and Ralph Brown said it best this week. If a guy made a catch on me, he was lucky. I mean, you just have to roll with that attitude. Mm-hmm. Another guy that I want to spend a couple of minutes on here this first segment, we'll set the show up shortly, is Stanley Morgan. And when we're talking about, you know, kind of getting that respect back, Lamar has taken steps, has the attitude, obviously has the ability. I mean, just watching the one practice we got this week and some of the drills, I mean, the guy's got the physical tools. You just need it between the ears, and the technique obviously follows that. But how about Stanley Morgan Jr. and Coach Dubb placing that leadership on him, Stanley kind of owning the off-the-field thing, and then all of these older guys, and this isn't a senior-laden team. There's a few, but there's more juniors on this team that have a ton of experience. Mm-hmm. And I think of Gates. I obviously think of Stanley going into their junior year specifically. There's
Foster.
Foster's a junior. So you have that junior element.
Farmer.
And Tanner Farmer's a junior, thank you. And you have Stanley just trying to be that mentor. Obviously, dude, be awesome.
Zigbo.
Yeah, and Ziggy's there. So you have this junior element. But what I think, and I'm interested to see with Stanley, and Coach Dubb touched on this, is, you know, Stan kind of waited his turn. And you look at the receivers room the last 2 years, you had Westy, you had Riley, you had Zoe, you had Seathan. I mean, you had guys that were catching footballs, but Stanley was always a pretty important option the last 2 years, even since his freshman year. He's a guy that had talent, could get open, made a lot of big plays in a lot of big games. Well, his time is now. That edict has been declared not only by Stanley, but by Coach Williams. I'm anxious to see how he'll adjust to defenses. The off-the-field locker room, wide receiver room, he's already embraced as far as trying to be the leader. When it comes to on-field, and this was talked about this week, the 50-50 balls. Stanley's made a lot of 50-50 plays when you think back to Indiana or you think back to the comeback against Miami. That was Stan. That was Stan's third freaking game.
Yeah.
Okay? But when you go up against elite talent, and I think it's fair to say that Wisconsin secondary as a core group was pretty elite. Think of the last play in overtime.
Sure.
Stanley to the end zone. That's who they went to. Yeah. And it was bad of the way. Or Malik Hooker against Stanley Morgan Jr. and Ohio State, because they're phenomenal, they were able to blanket him pretty well. Well, he's used that as fuel. And for Nebraska to move forward, not only respect-wise for future polls or poll position or standing, they're going to have him not only be the man, but be the man when everyone knows he's the man. How do you adjust to that target? We talk about it with Penn State expectations. Well, you better believe it. Stanley's going to be on everyone's radar and everyone's scouting report. It's not that he hasn't been, but he will be the guy, him and DPE. I'm anxious to see him adjust to that. Mm. And as this season moves forward, as much as they'll be able to throw the football in this offense.
Well, and he's setting up for, I don't think it's out of I don't think it's crazy to think that he's got the potential to bring home a 1,000-yard season for Nebraska.
Yep.
He has that potential. He's, you know, he was 500 some yards the last couple of years, right around there. And that was being target number three or number four. Mm-hmm. He's clearly the top guy now. And here's the other thing is DPE. I have not even factored this guy in. You know what I mean? Like, as you're thinking about 2017.
Don't tell him that because he'll remember.
No, I hope whatever motivates him. But, you know, you haven't even factored him in because, you know, there was the DPE of his freshman year. And then there's DPE of sophomore and junior year where he showed a few spurts here and there. He did. But nothing that warranted anything more than, good player, decent player. Right? Like, it wasn't. He didn't make you think about. He didn't look anything like he did his freshman year, put it that way. Nothing. He didn't have another USC game. He didn't have Michigan State punt returns or Iowa punt returns. Like, that's just been. So I haven't even factored him in this year. If he is as good as is being talked about, that he's legitimately back, has that burst, that twitch, whatever you want to call it, if that's a part of the fray this year, you can't just worry about Stanley Morgan if he's a legitimate threat. We have not seen, put it this way, we have not seen DPE healthy manning the receiver position since the USC bowl game. Think about that.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? You have not seen him as a receiver fully healthy since his freshman. He's a senior now. Right? Like it's
you blink and it's gone.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. So, and you know what? When you saw him in that role healthy, you're kind of like, okay, this will work. You know, Mike Riley became enamored with him, and then all the injuries started happening. And so he hasn't really been the same since. So if he can come back, Nebraska almost gets a bonus. You know what I'm saying? Like, Nebraska gets like this extra surge, this bonus.
It's gravy.
I don't think anybody's really counting on
it. It's straight up gravy is what it is. If you get him.
No one's counting on it.
Well, I think there's a lot of folks counting on him. You just haven't seen it for a long, long time.
But I think you just go in not expecting anything of him.
It's a big assumption, but if I'm a Nebraska football fan, and I've seen how good, like the tip of the iceberg with Pearsonell in the return game, and to me, the games that flash about him, he's owned Minnesota. He has absolutely dismantled Minnesota. The goal line play in 14 was tough, but he looked like a senior that freshman day. You know, there's a 24-17 loss, but he did really well against a really good Minnesota defense back then. And then pre-injury, pre-Purdue, he went off. The whole team went off, but he went off against Minnesota on the road in 15. So I know he can do it. And I know he can do it against sound defenses. Yeah. You just haven't seen it for a 12-game stretch.
Yeah, you don't factor it in. As you put it this way, Stanley Morgan, you do expect a lot.
Because you've seen
it. I'm expecting minimum 60 catches, minimum 800 yards, right?
Sure.
Like, this just
double his career total or match his career total.
Yeah, like that's what you totally expect. What do you expect from Pearsonell? You don't know. You can't put a number on it. I hope the guy's healthy.
This is massive. Between return yards, jet sweep yards, and receiving yards, I think a goal, if Nebraska's going to be knocking on that 9-10 better win number, they're going to be in Indy or playing for Indy when Turkey Day gets here. You're going to need 2,000 all-purpose yards from Pearsonell.
I have a hard time making him responsible for any yards just because you just don't know. You just haven't seen it.
I have no reservation putting that number out there for him, and I won't be surprised if he gets it.
Yeah. Hey, ability wise, nobody doubts it.
Well, that's my.
You go back to 14. He made the decision on whether or not to keep Bo Pelini more difficult. Pretty much himself.
I got a Pelini story for you.
Oh no!
It's hilarious. So last night, we're over at some friend's house, and we go to the neighbor. Okay, and the neighbor's got this sweet deck, and it'll get here. It's Colton's staring at me like, "What are you talking about?" And it was kind of chilly last night, and Timmy says, "Yeah, I know you're kind of soft, Schmidt. Here you go." So he throws me this double XL sweatshirt. It's an Adidas gray sweatshirt, and it's got kind of, it's not the embroidered, but kind of like the ironed on Nebraska stuff, you know, from 03. So yeah. I guess whose sweatshirt that is. I'm like, I don't know. It's an old lineman's. No, that's Bo's. Bo, when he left, had a lot of us over and just kind of started handing out Nebraska stuff. I was rocking Bo's sweatshirt last night, and they knew him from when he came here as the D coordinator. He was just lived around the corner from him.
Okay.
So this was from, I think, that stint.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Right. But it,
did you find yourself getting like
angry,
abnormally angry? Yeah.
No. And the funniest part about it was, is Bo and Carl would come over to their house. And they have two little girls, and Bo and Carl taught him how to play kick the can.
Jeez.
And what's cool about it is, I was like, was it normal kick the can, or was it Youngstown style where it was colorful? Was there some language with it? And he's like, no, it was Nebraska kick the can. It was cool. I went way off the railroad tracks with that, but
that's good. I'm surprised that Bo wore a double XL too.
That's what he does.
It was a little baggy.
It was, but it was warm and nice, and it helped with the corona. Okay, we are over time here this first segment. We're talking respect. Some individuals taking a step forward, and Nebraska trying to get back in that national discussion, even as meaningless as the top 25 is now with the college football playoff. You start in the mid-30s. It's still weird to see. If you've checked Nebraska football out for any amount of time. Here's the show. Zach Taylor, Nebraska football Hall of Famer and assistant wide receivers coach with the LA Rams. Our conversation with Zach Taylor, just a tremendous quarterback for Nebraska football. That is shortly. We'll catch up with Zach in the rewind this hour. Brandon Vogel will be with us at 8 o'clock. And then Dr. Petey. Derek Peterson of HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Derek will join us. He's done a tremendous job as he's joined the Hail Varsity team. We'll get caught up with him, get some of his thoughts on camp. Sauter Heyman, this weekend, a great time for you to go find Rick and the gang at Sauter Heyman, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, 100% real diamonds, except they're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. What's that mean to you? Well, they're still beautiful. They're still sparkly. She'll still love them. And they're eco-friendly, and they're 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mine diamonds. See why they're some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history. You can go see Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman today, 12th and O downtown in Lincoln, South Point Pavilion. Lincoln or out west with your friends at Sauter Heyman in Grand Island, sauterheyman.com. Zach Taylor, our chat with the new member of Nebraska Football Hall of Fame 2017. That's next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Back at it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Jay Moore, TJ Henning. We welcome in, now part of the Nebraska Football Hall of Fame, 2017 Big 12 Player of the Year on offense, Zach Taylor, the quarterback with us. Zach, great to speak with you again. Congratulations. How are you?
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, appreciate your time, and what's the reaction to being up for and in the Nebraska Football Hall of Fame this 2017 class?
Very surprised. You know, something that I certainly didn't expect to happen, but very grateful to have been a part of a great tradition like Nebraska, and was fortunate to have a lot of great teammates like Jay Moore, and you know, that was really a group effort and one of the best locker rooms I've ever been around.
Zach, I know you're not going to be able to make it back for the ceremony of being honored at one of the halftimes here in early September, but I know you haven't been – we talked last week, and you said you haven't been back since you left, which was kind of crazy. I didn't realize that. But whenever you would make it back to Lincoln, what are some of the few spots, the old stopping grounds where you have to go get a bite to eat, get something to drink? What are those spots you definitely got to hit up?
Bison Witches was my spot. I don't know if it's still there or not.
It's still there. Trust me, it's still there.
And the beer's still cold there, Zach, here. So.
My wife and I spent a lot of time there. I'm sure I went with Jay a million times, but that was a good spot. And I'd kind of forgotten this, but I recruited a kid in Iowa last year, and we drove through Lincoln for maybe an hour max. So I did actually get to swing through Haymarket real quick, but I never feel like I've been able to be back. But I've heard Haymarket's changed. I'd love to see it down there, you know, and kind of experience it, but certainly do miss Lincoln.
Well, you came to Lincoln as a JUCO transfer, and Coach Callahan was here in Nebraska transitioning from the option offense to the West Coast, and you made it fly, and you played for a Big 12 championship with Jay Bird in your senior season. What were your expectations as you came into Lincoln, and kind of what did you foresee your career path like at the college level, Zach, with just the opportunity you had?
Yeah, I just wanted to play. You know, that was one of the reasons I transferred from Wake Forest. I wasn't a great fit in that offense. Didn't feel like I was going to play football there. Wasn't having fun. Because, you know, if you're not playing, college isn't fun, just in general. The thing you're trying to work the hardest for, if you're not doing it, it's not a lot of fun. So my expectations were I just wanted to start. I wanted to go to a place that would give me an opportunity to start, and they told me they'd give me an opportunity, nothing more than that. And so really, in terms of expectations, day one, I just wanted to get on the field and be able to play. And, you know, fortunately was able to make that happen.
Zach, it's kind of, you brought up, you know, you went to Butler Community College. That's how you came to Lincoln. And the Last Chance U has been such a popular show on Netflix. Now in the season 2, I've seen both seasons. I don't know if you've seen any of it, kind of with East Mississippi Community College down there in Scuba, Mississippi. And it's just, it's a different world. I mean, was it that crazy for you if you've seen it as well as Butler there in Kansas? Or is that kind of a whole different situation as a JUCO school?
I haven't seen the show. I can imagine it's not too different. There was nothing to do where I was at. It was all about football. It was a bunch of guys who, you know, probably like in the show, it was going to be their last chance because maybe something happened to them previously. Or it was a lot of guys who knew that they were only going to be good enough to play for 2 years in football. And so it was a good group to be around. Really got you refocused on loving football again. And it was the perfect environment for me to really get my confidence back and physically mature. But certainly when there's not a lot to do, a lot of things can happen off the field. And fortunately, that's not my lifestyle. But junior college is a lot different than anywhere else.
Few minutes, Zach Taylor with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Hall of Famer 2017 in the class. And Zach, of course, a tremendous quarterback for Nebraska, Offensive Player of the Year in 2006. Zach, with this Nebraska locker room you were a part of, you mentioned it earlier here as we're talking. It was a great group of guys, but who are some of the guys you connected with? And was it easy to transition in? And you're a very humble guy, but if I ask everyone else about you, they would say you're no doubt a leader. How are you able to kind of prove yourself and do yourself to the teammates in that locker room?
Well, it was culturally, it was a fit for me, you know. And somebody asked me this question the other day, and I thought about it more after the interview was over, and really that was such a mature locker room. You know, you just speak to really the heart of the team is guys from Nebraska, you know, who have been brought up the right way. And most of them have worked, you know, when they're not around football, and just they've been forced to mature faster, and they're good people. And it's kind of the area I'm from. So it wasn't hard for me to fit in. So in terms of becoming a leader, all you have to do is display toughness, be humble, do things the right way, because that's what's expected of a Nebraska player. And Jay was brought up that way. Dane Todd was brought up that way. Bo Root, you know, all those guys. So, as long as you do that, you fit in instantly. And then if you can just prove yourself on the field, it's you can become a leader that way. So I thought it was pretty easy to fit in there at Nebraska. But, again, I might not have fit in everywhere. I might have gone to Miami, and it would have been totally not a fit because of the way I go about things. So I was fortunate to end up at Nebraska that way.
What were some of your options out of Butler? I mean, was it Nebraska and some other schools, or what made Nebraska the right place for you?
Well, fortunately, they were kind of in a transition period of quarterback, or otherwise I probably would have ended up at Marshall or Memphis. Those are the other two trips I took. A lot of people call really at the last minute. You know, mm-hmm. there were some of the lesser Big Ten teams jump in there at the last second, but I wasn't going to commit on my visit. I told my parents I'm not going to do it. I want to make sure I'm at the right fit. Marshall had a great fit for me from a playing standpoint, but as soon as you get on campus, it's over. You know, no matter what you say before your visit, once you get in there and experience that atmosphere, there's no saying no to that.
What was it like being a quarterback at Nebraska?
I really enjoyed it. I don't remember too many negatives. You put a lot of pressure on yourself because you know, the expectations are to win, and a lot of times the quarterback's a big part in that. And so, you know, the games I think about are all the games that we lost, because I think of all the things that I could have done better to help. And you know, I was fortunate to play with an unbelievable defense, you know, and we had great linemen. We had all the pieces in place, and so playing quarterback in Nebraska is kind of one of the best things in the world, I have to say. You know, certainly it's not all roses, but I had a lot of fun and was fortunate to be able to do that.
Yeah, I know getting used to that Callahan playbook was not easy. Talk about that a little bit. When you get that Bible kind of thrown in front of you, and your play calls are a couple paragraphs long. The process of going through that and getting comfortable with that, trying to be a starting quarterback in Nebraska.
Well, at first, it's very overwhelming. You know, I had to switch majors because of it. You know, I was a business major, and I was about to fail out of econ and accounting because I spent more time on my playbook than I did in those books. So. It was overwhelming at first. It was a little bit difficult to picture the plays initially, and even really going into the season, I didn't feel completely comfortable. But once you get the hang of that offense, and as a matter of fact, I'm in that offense right now here in LA, it is an awesome thing. Once it finally clicks and it all makes sense to you, and you can picture everything as it's being said, and I really enjoyed playing in it. It does take a year to get used to, and so you need some more experienced players to really maximize its potential, but. Like Jay said, there were some days where you had to close your eyes and say the play about 20 times over because it was, you know, maybe 13 to 15 words long. And, you know, you had to be perfect in the huddle or the play clock's going to run out. So, but you take a lot of pride in that. It puts a lot of pressure on you, and so you take a lot of pride in it, and you want to be great at it. And so, you know, I can still recite those play calls 15 years later because I had to repeat them so many times. I can still remember it like it was yesterday.
You kind of answered my question, or the question about to ask already, but learning that system and being a part of that intricate, in-depth system, preparing you for where you're at now in the coaching business, and being able to just coach multiple positions like you are. You've coached tight ends, you've been an OC, you've coached quarterbacks, now you're coaching receivers. But how that was able to help you out and what you're doing now?
Yeah, I'm a coach because of the foundation that my dad laid. But on top of that is because of the coaching I got at Nebraska. You know, Bill Callahan and Jay Norvell and Randy Jordan and all those guys had such an effect on how they coached me and what they taught me. And it was a no-brainer for me to get into the profession because of what I'd learned. That was the one thing I felt comfortable doing. I didn't feel comfortable being an accountant or selling insurance or anything like that. I felt comfortable being in a football field and teaching people because of the way I had been taught. So it was a natural carryover for me, and it's worked out so far. A
couple more minutes. Zach Taylor's with us, Hail Varsity Radio Hall of Famer 2017, the Nebraska class, and Zach part of it. Tremendous career at Nebraska and helped solidify the quarterback spot, number of records, and a number of wins. Zach, you've been an OC, like Jay said. You've been a different position coach. You've also been to the college level at A&M. I remember that night where A&M knocked off Nebraska, I think 9-6, and you were a GA that year, and then you transitioned to the NFL, back to college, now back to the NFL. What's your experience like now in L.A. as it's what's kind of old is new again as you move west from St. Louis to Los Angeles? How is it with the Rams? A lot of talent on that squad.
It's awesome. It's an unbelievable coaching staff, and that was a big draw for me to come out here is get to meet a lot of different people and see the way that other people have done it. You know, and I've, every day I'm around this head coach, Sean McVay, you're more impressed. He's 31 years old. He's probably the only 31-year-old in the world that's capable of leading an NFL team the way he's doing it. And it, just being around him every day teaches me more about leadership and more how to command coaches and players and how to interact with people and make them feel involved. And so it's really worked out as well as I could have hoped coming out here.
Zach, looking at it with NFL now, with the new CBA, the practices, and I know the players enjoy the new routine better, not having 2 days anymore, but how do the coaches view it now? Because, you know, you're a player at once, and you enjoyed those light days, but how do the coaches now view training camp now? Because you're limited in what you're able to do as a coach.
Right. I think it's good because it gives us more time to prepare for practice, you know, and really get a chance to have more staff meetings during the day, watch all the tape. You know, that was a problem with the old 2 days is you didn't get a chance. You did all these one-on-ones and two-on-twos and all that stuff, but you didn't get a chance to watch the tape and correct the errors. And now, with only having one practice, you get more hours in the day, really in this developmental phase of early training camp where you get to correct everything. And so you don't watch every play, as you know, Jay, but the coaches are able to make cut-ups and pick out the important stuff. And we just have more time to kind of get our feet underneath us and be prepared for meetings and make sure that we're maximizing our time with our players when we do get it.
Zach, a Nebraska question before we say goodbye. Nebraska's kind of back into a similar offense that you ran, pro-style attack, West Coast elements. And what are your thoughts on that working, not just in Nebraska, but at the college level? You have a number of hours to do it in the NFL. You did it successfully at Nebraska. Is it a hard offense to navigate in college?
No, I think now there's a lot of pro-style teams, and I've never heard a play call from Mike Ravi. I don't know how they verbalize things. But I think now people have really – they run a pro-style offense, but they've simplified the verbiage.
Okay.
And so it makes it easier for the players to learn, and I've experienced that. I went to Texas A&M. We ran a West Coast offense. We just simplified it way down and didn't shift in motion as much, but tried to make it a little bit simpler for the players to learn because they're in spread offenses in high school now, and their playbooks are very simple. And to get them to play fast early in college, I think people are learning to simplify the verbiage so these players can come in and understand it more. But there's a lot of success with pro-style teams right now in college, and I'm for it 100%. And I know that Nebraska has really great teachers on their staff. I coached Matt Moore at the Miami Dolphins, who played for all those guys, Kavanaugh and Mike Riley and Danny Langsdorf. And when they were at Oregon State, he raved about them every day. He talked about how great they were and how much they developed him. And I mean, as a matter of fact, Mike Riley has coached more quarterbacks in the NFL than any other coach in college football right now. So he certainly has a way of developing those guys. And Matt loved the way he was coached from them. And so I was a big fan when they hired Mike Riley and his staff, just based on what I heard from these other guys.
Zach, congrats to you. We'll catch up again. Best of luck this year in L.A., and thanks for a few minutes with us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Now it's time to get back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
All right, that's it!
You two guys leave me no choice. No television for a week. What?!
Winding down this first hour, weekend edition, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, ESPN 101.5. 1480 AM and the ESPN Lincoln app. Big thanks to Zach Taylor with the Rams, member of the 2005 and 2006 Huskers, and now a member of the Nebraska Football Hall of Fame and a roommate of our dear friend, co-host Jay Moore, during the week. So that was pretty cool to get caught up with him.
And 06 season for Zach Taylor. If Tanner Lee can turn that in. Turn that kind of season in.
There's some Nebraska's parallels there shape. With ability and offense and understanding. And yeah. Zach detailed it with the offense's strengths and what Riley's done. And he worked with Moore down in Miami as Taylor was the OC for the Dolphins for 3 years. And Riley's got a ton of guys in the league playing that quarterback spot. But the thing that I take away most with Zach Taylor and just watching him was just the grit and the guts, and he is absolutely, truly a Hall of Famer. And then just think of that bridge of Nebraska football and try and imagine it without Zach Taylor at quarterback.
Oh, geez.
I mean, think post-Jamal Lord, you transition into offense – and you go from Zach to Gans and from Gans to Taylor and Tommy. I mean, you've got the last 10 years in Nebraska football, the guy throwing or running the football, and in Zach's case, throwing the football. And just think of, you know, they're 8-4, 9-5, and their teams were good offensively and defensively almost won a conference championship. I mean, they were right there. And I think of that 06 season where they had a really good schedule. There's a couple of games that they hiccuped, but for the most part, they were in most of the games. I mean, SC beat them pretty convincingly, but it wasn't embarrassing. The A&M win to clinch the North was something you'll never forget. The Auburn Cotton Bowl was, man, it was just right there for them. And, you know, it was an era and a time because of Zach that he kind of brought it back. And he was responsible for that on this offense.
Yeah, you look, you're probably an interception away in Arrowhead from Nebraska winning the conference championship in 06. Remember that? Like, Zach just did not quite have enough zip on a ball into the end zone and got picked. Remember that game against Oklahoma?
Yeah, and if you watch it, I would bet money that he's probably being pressured when he throws it, but he'd never tell you that.
Yeah, because, you know, if you remember right, too, he did not have a cannon. What he had was accuracy and feel,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that was his thing, but he did not have a cannon. And he got picked in that. But, I mean, that's how close Nebraska was then. And it reminds me kind of you think about last year
mm-hmm.
for Nebraska, how close they were to beating Wisconsin. And if they did, they don't just beat Wisconsin. They win the division. You know, like, it's not.
What are you saying?
I think we know what I mean. We act like Nebraska is so far away. Stanley Morgan makes that catch in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska's in the Big 12 or in the Big 10 title game last year. Like, it's that close. Nebraska's not that far off. You know what I mean? They feel so far off when you see Ohio State, when you see how the Iowa game went. But I think you could explain a lot of that stuff away, and we can get into it next hour because I know we're up against the clock. But in that Wisconsin game, once you saw Tanner Farmer go down, Dylan Utter was the only remaining healthy starter on the O-line. From then on, the season tanked.
It was difficult. We'll get into it. Brandon Vogel, Derek Peterson, hour two of Hail Varsity next, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Hour 2 Weekend Edition, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery, we charge forward. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, big thanks to Colton and Ethan for making the show run. Can find us on Twitter at Mark Skurs, at Schmidt _ radio, at Hail Varsity, and take us with this afternoon and throughout football season with the ESPN Lincoln app. 466-377-6800, 825-5865, the Schilling Bridge Cork and Tap House Tap the Line opportunity in about 30 minutes. You want to dial us in. Derek Peterson of Hail Varsity, Dr. Petey coming up. And we welcome in Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel to get his kick started. Vogues, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are all right. A lot covered, and we kind of started off the show talking about respect and where Nebraska can go as a team, as a program, when you look at the top 25 receiving votes category versus the traditional top 25, and some room to grow there. And then a lot of guys have taken steps this offseason and embraced roles leadership-wise through the first week of camp, specifically Lamar Jackson, Stanley Morgan Jr., were two guys Mark and I talked about. I want to start talking offensive line, though, Vogues, to get things going. And with your pulse on the team, What do you think the reaction has been internally for that offensive line as they kind of geared up during the summer, and so far so good this fall? They look to be gelling in that respect. Kind of bullet point we're talking about here. The O-line, I think they've got a bit of chip on their shoulder. Do you agree?
We'll certainly see. It's kind of the biggest. I mean, Nebraska's got a lot of questions at a lot of spots, but it might be the biggest sort of question mark for me, just because I feel like Nebraska's had talent on the offensive line coming into the season. That's a really tough spot to avoid injuries, and Nebraska hasn't, as you've gone through seasons. We can all remember instances of that, but we've just got to see some improvement there. You know, when you look at 2015 and 16, just limiting it to this coaching staff, it felt a lot the same to me. And it just, the offensive line was kind of somewhere in the middle. Wasn't a strength, wasn't totally a weakness overall. So with that being said, even though they've got, you know, so many players, 4 out of 5 starters returning back there, a good group of young up-and-comers behind them, I still just got to see it with them. So it would be interesting to know, like, what the coaches are really thinking about it at this stage. We know what they've, you know, said and in one bit of media availability at this point, but it's probably going to go all the way through the end of September before I totally feel like I have a feel on what this offensive line could be.
And Brandon, when you say you have to see it, doesn't a lot of that have to do with health? Because I just think back to last year, and when Tanner Farmer went down during the Wisconsin game, you were left with Dylan Utter as the only healthy original starter, right? You had guys playing, but they were dinged up or they were out altogether. And it's pretty much from that point on that the season, it just tanked. And the offense in particular also tanked. Is it more about health than anything else this year?
It could be. And, you know, so that injury was 8 games into the season. But you think back to Foster going down in fall camp last year. Yep. That alters things. He was penciled in as a starter. So, you know, I do think that's a big part of it. So health and depth. And Nebraska, we don't know what's going to happen on the health front. You never do. On the depth front, with them electing to stick with those redshirt guys, when they had every opportunity to pull one off a guy last year, certainly could be one of those factors, I think, that might push them over the top. It at least makes them on paper better equipped to handle those sorts of things.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. When we talk about health and development, and in fairness with this staff, they're coming from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten, and I don't think you know till you really just get into it and you live through a couple of seasons just how brutal the Big Ten is. And that's something that I didn't really care about or put into my brain about the Big Ten. You know, when Nebraska moved here, it truly became, how good is your second team or even a third team guy if you got to go there for a guard? Case in point, 8th game of the year. How can you survive the rest of the year? And I think one thing Nebraska's looked at and continued to develop, and they're trying to get more guys ready, and they recruited hard, is that depth, because, Vogues, you have a second line that has had time in the program. Three-fifths have anyway, and then you have a guy like Barnett that isn't even up with that second group yet, but he's continuing to try and kind of grind. You've got some walk-ons you've tapped into. I feel better if God forbid something happens to these penciled in 5 starters, that you've got guys like a Wilson or a Farniok, and I know they're young, but they've kind of accepted that ability and role to push for a starting spot. You got a guy like Gaylord that's been in there. I think Nebraska's in a much better spot than they've been in past years with some talent with that depth. Do you think that that is something that's been an effort by the team and the O-line, really, to get more than just five?
Well, I think so. I think you're always trying to get that. And it's just it's kind of strange to figure how Nebraska has ended up in those spots, like post Wisconsin last year, so often over their stretch in the Big Ten, really. You think back to the Pliny years, and some of those situations come to mind too, where you've kind of got one option, and it might be a swing guy, a guy who practiced all fall camp at tackle, and all of a sudden he's playing left guard. It's tough. The Big Ten. I asked a bunch of Big Ten coaches this at media days in Chicago, and none of them would really bite, which I kind of knew they would. Basically, what kind of conference is the Big Ten? Well, the numbers all show it's a run defense conference. When you look at the rushing numbers at the end of the year, it's always between Big Ten and the SEC in terms of their rushing totals are lower. It's just harder to run the ball in those two conferences. So what does that mean? Well, the first thing it brings to mind for me is physicality. Even more so than if it was one of the best rushing conference offensively. You've just got a bunch of collisions at the line, a bunch of hard tackles after 3 or 4 yard gains. And you've got to have more than 6 offensive linemen, I think, to really be able to withstand that in this conference.
Brandon Vogel with this Hail Varsity Radio. It's funny you bring that up, the collisions at the line thing. It took the kids to fan day last week. And so got, up close and personal and got to see, guys without the pads on and get a sense for...
They were thrilled to see you, by the way.
For their physical... Yeah, they really were. Their physical prowess. And it's funny, like, when you think... If you transition over to defense, you think about Mick Stoltenberg and the question is does he have the body type to play that nose, right? Like, because he's not the squat, short kind of guy. But after seeing him up close, I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, because there's only like 20 other people in the world built like this guy. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, do you think, in particular on the defensive line, as you talk about collisions and controlling the line of scrimmage and all that, I think Mick's sort of an outlier, or is that just being optimistic? He's not the true nose. He's not your perfect kind of body type for that, but... good luck getting rid of that guy as an offensive lineman.
Absolutely, and that's what you want that nose to do. Is you want him to eat up blocks? You want him to eat up two blocks if you can. So Mick has the nose tackle size to do that. So what we're really talking about is he's too tall. Well, you can through coaching, I think you can address a lot of that. And I'm assuming if it's an issue, it's kind of been the mantra ever since Bob Diaco showed up, which is stay low, which you teach to all defensive and offensive linemen. But for that reason, like I think if you're going to go one way or the other, if you're going to choose, okay, we've got a nose who isn't prototypically sized, would you rather have one who's too tall or too slim? I think you go with too tall all the time. And Mick definitely checks that box. So I think he's going to have a pretty good year. I think, you'll see a little bit of rotation on that defensive line. Nebraska's got 4 guys I feel pretty good about. Do they have more than that? Well, that's one of those questions that we've got to figure out here over the next month and a half.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, what's your reaction to Diaco's praise of Kalu earlier this week?
It was certainly lofty.
There's a statue in the offing.
Well, if you ask Diaco, there may be. I could see it a little bit. I see the reasons that safety seemed like a better fit. Now I don't get to see him in practice every day like Bob Diaco does. So you have to kind of take his word for it on that. He knows defense way better than any of us. So yeah, it rang true to me for the most part. You're always going to boost your guys up a little bit. One of the best safeties in the country. That remains to be seen, but given who's saying it, given what's happened at Nebraska, they had every opportunity to move him back after Chris Jones went down. A lot of people assumed they would. It has to tell you something. So it's sort of adding up to something close to, I guess, what Diaco said this week.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. switch over to the offensive side of the ball. What do you expect out of Mornay, Pearson, and L this year? Because I expect like nothing. So it's like whatever he contributes to me is gravy. Like where do you sit on what you're actually expecting from DPE?
Pretty high, I think. Based on sort of how his spring went, how healthy he looks for the first time in a while. And I think, you know, he knows that after that brilliant freshman year, which was primarily a punt returner, injuries derailed him a little bit. So he's kind of totally. Got that last year bump potential that I think is there. And listening to him talk a couple of times seems like it's there. So I'd have to look up his career numbers. But I think when you look at both he and Stanley, they are both guys who are poised to, in terms of receiving at least, sort of go above their career receiving totals with as much as I think Nebraska is going to throw the ball. And I don't think the balance there is going to be way out of whack with what was in past years, or at least it shouldn't be. I don't think that's the best way for Nebraska to do it. But it'll be enough of a difference when you add in, I think, an increased completion percentage for those guys to have some pretty big numbers as presumably Nebraska's top two receivers.
But there's a difference, right, in what you expect out of Stanley versus DPE. You know what I'm saying? It's just because it's almost like DPE is the forgotten guy that no opponents are really thinking about or worried about, right? Like you expect Stanley to, you know, 60 catches, 800 yards minimum. DPE, you're like, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to – but you know he has the ability, but he hasn't been able to show it for a couple years.
Yeah, he absolutely does. And I guess in that sense, maybe my expectations for him are a little bit higher, but you factor in what you just said, essentially. Everyone kind of expects it from Stanley at this point. He's going to be the guy that opposing defenses highlight when they sit down to watch Nebraska film the week ahead of that game. So I think that even adds a little bit to what DeMornay might be capable of putting up numbers-wise in 2017.
Vogues, how do you think Stanley will handle being kind of the focal point of a defense?
I think pretty well. It'll get a little bit tougher. So much of what happens on the outside there is determined by matchups, and Stanley's a tough one. So he'll get extra attention. I still expect him to win more than his share of those one-on-one battles when he gets them. And I think he sort of is mature enough. And this is something where his relationship with Keith Williams, which dates back to pre-Nebraska, mm-hmm. probably helps him a little bit. He's been exposed to these ideas. Keith Williams' intense focus on technique, all of those things kind of make him not just Nebraska's best receiver on paper and, you know, based on what we've seen in terms of production going into the season, but also he just knows the position. You know that he knows it. You know that if he is getting a ton of attention, and maybe his catches go down, maybe Tyler Hobbs' catches go way up at tight end, you feel good about Stanley being able to handle that because he knows he's doing his job and he knows he's having an effect on the offense, even if it isn't in the stat sheet.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Running back position, any sense for how that thing is going to shake out in terms of who gets, you know, by year end, assuming everybody's healthy, who gets most of the totes?
Not yet. We had to pull up on Hail Varsity a couple of weeks ago, who leads Nebraska in rushing. And I actually selected Wilbon. I still am enticed by his sort of ability in small spaces. He seems like the most explosive guy. Yeah. I think who it'll end up being is probably Nebraska's best pass catcher back there, which may be Bryant. So it's just tough to tell with that group. Definitely need to see more than what we've seen at this point.
Underrated group, you think? I feel good about that group. Really good.
I feel pretty good about it. I would say it's an accurately rated group, and that there's a lot of optimism about them. But you're still sort of looking for not even the featured back, but the guy out of those three that when it's third and four, and whether it's a swing pass out of the backfield or outside zone, you just know that by end of September, October, oh, this is where Nebraska goes if they want to go to a running back in that situation. I don't think we know that yet. You've got an interesting blend of styles between those three. You're just waiting for the one guy that can kind of put it all together and consistently produce results in a game. And to be fair, you know, I don't know that any of those guys have truly had that opportunity yet. Terrell Newby took a lot of the carries last year.
Newby did motor for a number of yards, and it'll be interesting to see who shakes out for that running back room. And here's what my gut says, Vogues, and you can react to this. You too, Kranak. I think they're just gonna go situation by situation. They're gonna do the committee thing again. I think there's a lot of talent in that room, but I think when push comes to shove, do they have an Adrian Peterson can do it all at the college level back there? They just don't. I mean, you just have some strengths that each of the guys possess. Who's the most well-rounded? Probably Bryant. I mean, just because as young as he was to pick up the pass pro with what they want to do, because they don't want to show you or get predictable with their play call or personnel packages. So I think they're just going to kind of scheme it based on some weaknesses of the defense. And in 1 week, you'll see Will Bond doing his thing. Other weeks, you'll see Bryant do his thing. And then with Ziggy, the thing with Ziggy is he's got to stay healthy. And he has got to keep that back from getting smoked. And I think that's to me his the Achilles, no pun there. But that's the thing with Ziggy. I like him the best. But I know that I think he's just been dinged. And he's been dinged the last couple of springs. That's taken some time away from him.
Yeah, and I think you can get by that way. The key to doing it, in my mind, is you've got to have a super efficient passing offense that's decently explosive. So you don't want to be telegraphing, okay, Ozigbo's in the game, this is their between the tackles back. Mm-hmm. Wilbon's in the game, this is their swing pass and big playback, however it were to break down. But if teams are consistently having to say, well, we've got to stop pass first. If we don't do that, they're going to bubble screen and quick slant us to death. Then you become a little bit less worried about what maybe you're telegraphing to them by which running back's in the game, because that's sort of the secondary focus.
Yes.
So I think you could do that with this particular set of backs, and then you really can utilize their strengths. So we'll see how Nebraska approaches that part of it.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues, before we say goodbye, it is what we do traditionally at the end of every Brandon Vogel interview. Tell folks about your book and where they can get it.
Yeah, it's everywhere now. It's starting to show up in local bookstores in Nebraska. Of course, you can get it anywhere online. Books are sold, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, University of Nebraska Press. Dream Like a Champion. John Cook's book, really. I was just fortunate enough to work on it. But, it's been exciting to see it get out there, to hear from a couple of people who've had a chance to read it and what they're taking from it. And volleyball kicks off next Monday, so it'll be exciting to pretty intriguing team for Nebraska when you look at what they have returning. So,
Dream Like a Champion, John Cook, Brandon Vogel, Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. So
audiobook coming soon. Me and Chris.
How would we separate that? Just I do the even chapters, you do the odd.
I think we just go every other sentence.
That would be annoying.
You know? Yeah, a little bit. That's all right.
We can do different voices.
Or we could do a harmony.
Yeah.
You know? Just both read it at the same
time. Like a chant, right?
Yeah.
Record sales. There we go. Vogues, thanks for your time, man. We'll catch up next week. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
There he is.
Thanks, Brandon.
I love that idea, Kranak. The audiobook is strong. I'd love to do audiobooks. That'd be fun.
Minimum, I don't know. I think that thing would get crazy downloads.
Why don't we just call Morgan Freeman up and just say, hey, do this, please.
Because then we don't get paid.
No,
you kidding
but
me?
If it's a cook by if it's a book by Brandon Vogel and John Cook, then it kind of deserves Morgan Freeman, doesn't it?
Deserves us. You know, and I'm trying to get paid out of this deal.
Uh-huh. Yeah, your hand's out. I see it now.
Well, you know.
Hartley Dykes, here we go. Pay me.
Dollar per download. That's my going rate.
Wonderful.
And then I'm just going to spam all my followers.
Hmm. Well played.
I don't have a lot. Be like, well, dude, download it.
Well played, Crane Act.
Cha-ching!
All right. Guy's been just rocking it with HailVarsity.com. New member of our team, Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey.
He'd buy one.
Yeah,
he's listen to it.
He's tremendous. Just great coverage with Nebraska football. Jacob Padilla, of course. Greg Smith, Brandon Vogel. I mean, HailVarsity.com is just a tremendous site for you to check out and get all your Husker needs. We'll catch up with Derek Peterson, get his thoughts on camp as Hail Varsity Radio continues the weekend edition presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Back with you. It's the weekend edition. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, and can take us with the ESPN Lincoln app, ESPN FM 101.5, 1480 AM. We welcome in Dr. Petey. 15 is where you find him on Twitter. Derek Peterson of Hail Varsity. And he's a great follow. He's a tremendous read, and we are excited to have him on the weekend edition. Derek, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're hanging in. We're staying dry. We're indoors. That's a good thing. And we're just talking some Nebraska football. Just got done spending a few minutes with Brandon Vogel. Derek, want to start off as first and foremost, welcome to the Saturday morning edition of Hail Varsity. And you've been here for a couple weeks now in Nebraska, and you've been covering camp all week. What are your thoughts here? If you could pick one, either coach or player, that's made an impression on you, who is it?
I keep finding myself going back and watching J.D. Stillman when they're doing wide receiver drills. He's caught my eye quite a bit over the two practices that we've gotten to see. Just really fast, really explosive on his routes and crisp route runner. And then Jalen Bradley and Trey Bryant are two guys in the backfield that I just keep coming back to.
Interesting about Jalen Bradley, because you wonder if it's a, you know, you heard he was mentioned by Coach Langsdorf after practices. How much of that is motivating the other guys versus, no, this kid actually has a chance to pull ahead of the other three that are seemingly in front of him right now?
I would bet that it's a little bit of both, because Langsdorf also said that they don't have a guy that has kind of taken that position and run with it, and he wants to have one singular guy to be the workhorse back, and then they can sprinkle some other guys in as the game calls for it. But I think it's a little bit of both, honestly. Bradley looks good. They like what he brings to the table, and him and Trey Bryant both have been guys that have had pretty good hands and pretty quick feet coming out of the backfield, catching passes, and those little short, quick passing game is something that they're going to try to do a lot of this season. So I think that's pretty important to them.
Derek Peterson's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Can find him on Twitter at DrPD15, and does a great job of covering Nebraska for Hail Varsity. .com and magazine. So, Derek, you mentioned Spielman and obviously Bradley looked good. Defensively, let's spend a few minutes over there. What do you think this defense can become? We were all at practice after Diaco, and he spent time on Kalu. Do you think Kalu can be that difference maker at safety, and can it kind of permeate the rest of the defense? I mean, what did you think of Diaco's praise? I asked Brandon this, and I want to get your take on it.
Oh, I think Kalu can be a star. You know, Diaco is so high on him, and that kind of makes me a little bit more excited about what he's going to do this season. I've been going back and watching games from last season, and there are just glimpses of you know, one of the best secondary players, I guess, in the country is what Diaco's saying. Mm-hmm. I think Kalu can be really, really good. And I definitely agree with you that I think that is – he's got kind of that unspoken leadership ability that's going to kind of trickle down to the rest of the guys. I think he's exactly what they need in the secondary. So, yeah, I think he can be really good.
Derek Peterson with us, newest member of the Hail Varsity staff. You can find his work at hailvarsity.com and in the magazine, and now with us on Saturday mornings.
You're not. There's no blood contract. You have to be here every Saturday, Derek.
What are you talking about? No, Derek, you signed it. You signed it. You can't back out now.
Is that $119 million, $129 million contract?
It's close.
For 11 years?
Yeah, it's close. I think you're getting confused. I think this is the fall camp kind of confusion setting in. You are not Adidas. You are a human, just so you know. A little bit of a difference there. I'm curious on your take here. Now, you've been covering Oklahoma for a few years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so it's not often that a writer or member of the media will go from covering one kind of high major Division I program then to another, different conferences, sort of, you know, their peer institutions. After covering Oklahoma for this long, who's been pretty much a championship caliber team under Bob Stoops for years now, and then coming and seeing Nebraska, what are you seeing as noticeable differences, whether it be overall talent or size or speed or whatever? What do you think is, when you see Nebraska, do you think roster wise overall they're capable of achieving kind of some Oklahoma type heights, or are they missing something?
I was thinking about this the other day. I think one of the biggest things for me between that I've noticed between Oklahoma and Nebraska is kind of an attitude. Oklahoma, and this comes from their quarterback in Baker Mayfield, they just have kind of this, we're better than you, we know it, we're going to beat you. They have kind of, and it's not a cocky attitude, but it's almost like that.
Defiant.
You know, I just see it from players every once in a while, and I haven't really seen that from Nebraska. I mean, their quarterback, Tanner Lee, is obviously way different from Baker Mayfield in terms of personality. And I think Baker sets the table for all of that in Oklahoma. So that's one of the biggest differences. And then I think size up front in the trenches, Oklahoma's just so big. Nebraska's not, at least from what I've seen.
Difference in size and from an athleticism standpoint, from what you've seen with Nebraska, I think Nebraska, I mean, this goes into the last couple recruiting classes, and you see some of the guys like a Lindsey, like a Lamar Jackson. Do you think Nebraska's getting there? I mean, do they have some of those pieces, those freak athletes that combine size and speed? Do you see that on some of Nebraska's roster? And Oklahoma's a great kind of comparison point because of, I mean, they're in the top 10 every year. They've been to the playoff once. They've competed for championships. They kind of reload, and that's the expectation. Nebraska wants to get where Oklahoma's been. Do you see Nebraska making strides, at least body type wise, on that roster?
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's pretty evident. Just, you said already, Lamar Jackson, mm-hmm. And then Tyjon Lindsey. Those two guys, they look really good through practice so far. And those are two guys that you can look at and you can say, okay, Mike Riley can get these types of players. And I think that's really important for them moving forward. If they can just keep getting those types of athletes at those skill positions and those really important positions on the outside that can make plays for you. Yeah, definitely.
quick question for you on Oklahoma. And how has Oklahoma been able to, and I know it's their offense and they transitioned a bit from from kind of the spread hurry up with Trevor Knight to back to kind of the air raid, right? Back when they won their championship. How's Oklahoma been able to balance a really effective run game with just a deadly passing game? They are varied. They are two-dimensional offensively, and they'll run all over you if you don't stop it. And then if they want to have fun with you, they can throw it at you. How are they able to balance that and juggle that? It's been successful for them.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is Lincoln Riley. He's a really good coach. I don't know, you know, we don't know yet how good of a head coach he's going to be, sure. But from as an offensive coordinator, he was really, really good. He knows exactly what his team does well and what his team isn't going to do so well, and he knows what buttons to push to get those guys ready to go. I think he's a huge, huge reason for their offensive success the last couple of years. And then they've just had, you know, they've kind of gotten lucky with some guys. D.D. Westbrook coming in and then Baker Mayfield transferring. I mean, you have to have a little bit of luck, but, you know, they've got skill and speed and size at all the right positions. And then Lincoln Riley just knows how to plug and play and get those guys ready to go. I think he's a big factor in all of that.
Derek Peterson with his Hail Varsity Radio. Switching back to Nebraska, and, you know, you're getting your first kind of up-close look at these guys over this past week, been able to see a couple practices. Demorde Pearson-Eld is a guy that he electrified the fan base as a freshman, was the best punt returner in the country, got injured, had a few flashes here and there as a sophomore and junior, but almost nobody outside of Lincoln is expecting anything of this guy. He's not a marked man if you're an opponent. From what little you've seen, can you give the scouting report on how he's looked? Has he stood out to you in any way?
Yeah, dude's got an attitude, and in a good way. He's been quiet, going about his business. Keith Williams loves him. He hasn't really needed a whole lot of coaching because, you know, he's doing everything pretty textbook. His routes are clean. He's explosive. You know, I've been really impressed by him, and he's. I didn't realize how he's almost the same size as Tyshawn Lindsey. I didn't realize that going in, but he's impressive when you look at him from a physical standpoint. He's a big dude. I think he can more than hold his own. He's been impressive, and they've got him back there fielding punts too in practice, and so that's something that I think people can get a little excited about because that's where he made his mark.
You expecting that receiver group, largely untested outside of Stanley, and you can throw DPE in there. Are you expecting that? Because you mentioned J.D. Spielman. You got praise for DPE. Everybody knows what Stanley Morgan can do. Do you think this bunch overall is maybe kind of being overlooked? And do you expect them to be a pretty productive bunch?
Yeah, I think overlooked is a good word to use. I think also part of that has to do with people not really knowing what to expect numbers-wise from Tanner Lee. You've got some people that are saying, 3,500 yards, and you've got some people that are saying, well, you know, what happens if he doesn't do well? So I think part of that is just the quarterback effect and not really knowing. I think they're, like you said, they're maybe being overlooked a little bit. They're young outside of Morgan and Pearson-Eld, and they don't really have a ton of quality depth that's going to scare opponents. But I think in some of the younger guys like Tyshawn Lindsey and then Kean Williams, I think they've got some guys that can maybe surprise some people this year.
Derek Peterson's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Dr. PD15. Find and follow him on Twitter. Great coverage in Nebraska on HailVarsity.com. Derek, the last thing I want to ask you about is the comments Coach Langsdorf made. And that about Tanner Lee, and it was kind of, it wasn't funny, but it was very interesting about, because a lot's been made about Tommy Armstrong and how he got Nebraska out of a ton of trouble. He just made plays where there weren't any. A lot of times there were also mistakes that followed. But Langsdorf was, I don't want to say quick to counter, but made sure he pointed out that, you know, more of a classically trained drop-back quarterback can help his O-line because of the consistency, where he's going to set up, where he's going to make sure to be in the pocket, how he can avoid things in the pocket, but he'll help Theo line up by being where he's supposed to be. I thought that was interesting. And with Langsdorf kind of hitting on that, do you think, and you've seen this at Oklahoma with the quarterbacks and the style they had, kind of go into that a little bit, just what a guy with really good pocket presence can do for the receivers, for his O-line, for an offense?
That can help so much. Just for the O-line, knowing where their quarterback is going to be, mm-hmm. And knowing that he's not going. And, you know, we've seen Tanner take off and run a little bit, but that's not his style. So just knowing that he isn't going to get outside, break a play down, and you're going to have to kind of go into, what is it? But you're not going to have to try to figure out what's going to happen next or figure out where you sure. need to be or kind of, you know, what's going to happen, because it's not as unpredictable as it was with Tommy, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
So I think that helps a lot with the offensive line. I don't know how much of a difference really it's going to be for the receivers. I mean, Keith Williams was talking about it, that, you know, he throws the same ball. It's catchable. It's at their, in their hands. It's at their chest. I mean, I don't think there's going to be that much of a difference from the receivers between going from Tommy to Tanner. But I think there's definitely going to be a noticeable difference on the offensive line, because they're going to know. And that's going to help so much, because they're not going to have to be thinking about that. They're just going to be able to say, oh, hey, there's a lineman or a defensive lineman coming at me. Let's hit him.
just do one thing.
Yeah, just do one thing, not have to worry about, is my quarterback outside? Is my quarterback scrambling? Is he about to run? What do I do?
Mm-hmm. Derek Peterson with the Hale Varsity Radio. Real quick on Tanner Lee before we're up against the break. The amount of praise this guy's gotten from quarterback gurus and Chris Mortensen and all these types, saying they're pretty much saying he's the most talented thrower in the country. Basically, that's what they're saying. From what you've seen in practice, not in a camp kind of setting, drills kind of setting, but in practice with his actual team, does he stand out to you like that? Does Nebraska have an elite talent at quarterback?
I don't know how definitively I can say that. Nebraska's been pretty notorious for putting the team drills and kind of scrimmage-style play on the opposite side of the field so that we can't really see them. But from what I've seen, Tanner looks really good. He doesn't miss very often. The ball comes out clean. It looks so effortless when he's trying to throw it. He can kind of throw it up and drop it into a spot, or he can throw it on a rope and get it to where he wants to. And I've been really impressed with that. I don't know if there's anything that has really kind of surprised me, but we also haven't seen too much 11-on-11 drills where, you know, he's having to break down a defense and fire it into a spot. We just haven't seen a whole lot of that yet.
Derek, thanks for the time this morning, man. Awesome work, and thanks for your coverage at Dr. PD15 on Twitter. Derek Peterson, and you can read him and follow him and find him on HaleVarsity.com. Take care. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up with you next week. Thanks for the time.
Hey, sounds good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
There he is, Derek Peterson with us, Dr. PD15. We need to get that Hale Varsity drone. So when they have practices across the field, blocked by large linemen, we can see. Now, I'm just happy to be allowed in, to be honest.
How could they prevent that? Think about it.
The drone?
They would have to scramble a drone fighter jet.
Have one of their quarterbacks throw at it and knock it down. That's how it's going to happen. That's how you get rid of the drone.
You call over the rifle team? Something? What do you do?
Pull! No,
that would be pretty.
No, look, you can't return this.
You would at least get an hour. It would take at least an hour for them to figure out how to get rid of our drone.
Man. Right?
Well, Tanner Lee's pretty accurate.
It'd take them
right?
15 seconds to know how to get rid of us.
Well, but we can hide behind bushes.
Oh, it's sure. Fine. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. They wouldn't be able to find us. Well, Tanner Lee's accurate, though.
Yeah.
There's a good
exactly.
chance if we fly too low, he'll pick us off.
Sure. There we go. Mm. Quick timeout. We'll wind down a Saturday with Hale Varsity Weekend presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Greed. Big thanks to Derek Peterson. He was tremendous, as was Brandon Vogel. And a rewind with Zach Taylor. 7 out of 10, that's too many. The portion of unbuckled vehicle occupants killed in Nebraska roads last year. They've been wearing their seatbelts at a minimum. 69 alive today. Save more lives. Please click it and make sure you buckle up. And law enforcement on the lookout for seatbelt violations this month. So click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. As we have about a minute left here. Kranach, plans for the weekend. What do you got going?
Well, it's going to be cleaning. We're going to have a bunch of little girls over. My daughter's having like her first
party.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's going to be just loud, man. I'm going to start drinking at noon, I think.
Don't fall into the pool.
Yeah, I might have to bail. I got shopping to do. Something.
You'll go get some Adidas. I like it.
What you got, man?
Family reunion.
Hey.
Yeah.
All right.
We're supposed to golf. Good. Mother Nature's giving us the middle finger. No.
Come on.
Look, Colton says it's time to go. No. No.
The Schmitty's getting on a, right? You can laugh at that.
Next time, we'll talk to you Monday. Hail Varsity.
All right.
Thanks.